Welcome to History Class After Hours. I'm Joseph Barron. Joining me is Brian.
Hello.
We are enjoying a hydrological event right now.
It's raining very hard.
It is very, yes.
Yeah.
Streets are flooding. It's time to build the ark. It might come to that.
Yeah.
There's literally a lake outside my window right now. But anyway.
And they did a cancel school.
Yes, we are still here. We're dedicated to our trade.
Yeah.
Yes. So this last month started what?
The caucuses.
The caucuses, yes. Woo. We're now fully in the campaign season.
Yep.
Horrible commercials. Here they come.
Oh boy, oh boy.
I've always felt like I'm more likely to vote against somebody because of their commercials and vote against their opponent.
Well, I feel like I see an equal number of commercials that it just cancels out.
Yeah. But there are some that are just so bad. I'm like, I cannot possibly ever vote for you because your judgment is lacking that you thought this was a good idea.
During the runoff, like 2 years ago, like there were just way too many.
Yes.
It was not fun.
I would like to see a study done. How often do people actually change their minds because, or make their decision based off of political ads?
Yeah. That would, if it hasn't happened yet, then they really should.
They should.
Yeah.
Apparently they think they work because they spend millions and millions of dollars doing it. Oh, well. But anyway, we're starting a trilogy.
Ooh, like Lord of the Rings.
Star Wars. Prequels. No. What would Star Wars be considered now with 9 episodes?
Like 3 separate trilogies.
Okay. But we're doing a trilogy on presidential elections.
Ooh.
Today is 10 of the most bizarre elections in American history. And then we're going to have 10 of the most unique presidential candidates in American history. And then 10 of the most bizarre political parties that have had a candidate for president.
All right.
Yes, we're looking at strange American history. Dun, dun, dun. You should know some of these. You're taking the U.S. right now.
I am. Hopefully I know.
You might need to help me out. All right, so first one. 1800.
Jefferson versus Adams.
Jefferson versus Adams. All right. It's considered so bizarre that the United States had to amend its constitution afterwards.
Oh, yeah.
This was pre-12th Amendment. Electoral.
Wait. No, 1800 was Jefferson, Burr, and Adams. Did I just get that wrong? Oh,
no. I'm telling Miss King on you.
Don't tell her. I will get destroyed.
All right. So pre-12th Amendment, Electoral College members each had 2 votes for president, and there were no official tickets. Whoever gained the most votes was president, and second place took vice presidency. I think we should go back to that system. That'd be interesting.
That would be very interesting.
Because that means it would either be Trump-Biden or Biden-Trump.
Yeah.
That would be must-see TV there. Though problems with the system were apparent in 1796, the election of 1800 saw Jefferson tie with his Democratic-Republican running mate Aaron Burr. Both had 73 votes to Adams' 65. Congress would call upon to break the tie. Enter Alexander Hamilton, the nation's first Treasury Secretary. Kind of all-around bad guy. Is that a bad take?
I mean, he did some bad and some good, but he has a really popular musical, so maybe don't say some bad stuff.
People overlooked that he was just trying to undermine pretty much everybody within the government.
Yeah, I mean his bank system was good.
Yes.
Yeah.
And he was really into military uniforms.
Yeah.
He kept on changing the design of officers' uniforms in the American Army for some reason. So, nonetheless, Hamilton engaged in a campaign to convince the Federalists to vote for Jefferson, his lesser of three evils. Writing in a letter, Mr. Burr loves nothing but himself, thinks of nothing but his own aggrandizement. Never heard of that word before.
Neither have I.
Man, he's a man of words.
Yeah.
He also really hated John Adams.
Well, everyone hated John
Adams. Yeah, he was kind of a hard guy to get along with. The House of Representatives didn't easily arrive at its decision, casting 35 ballots in the first week before finally voting to name Jefferson the victor and Burr the vice president on February 7th, 1801. Making the election all the more crazy, the rivalry between Burr and Hamilton would continue for three more years when Burr would get the final laugh when he killed him in a duel.
Yep.
And it also became a really famous milk commercial back in the 90s.
Really?
Mm-hmm. Milk had this big, it was called the Got Milk campaign. Yeah, yeah, yeah. And it was all these like scenarios where you like someone really needed a cup of milk. And there was this radio show, trivia show going on. And there was this, it was like guy's house, all this Aaron Burr, Alexander Hamilton, like artifacts and paraphernalia and all that stuff. And the question was like, for $1 million, who killed Alexander Hamilton? The guy was eating a peanut butter sandwich and he couldn't say Aaron Burr because his lips, he's like, Aaron Burr. And then it was just Got Milk. That's why I always remember that. But anyway. Now we're moving to 1824. This was odd from the get-go.
Oh, wait, is this the corrupt bargain?
Yes. Oh, look at you. Yeah. Maybe you should be taking the lead on this one.
I had to memorize dates.
If only for the fact that the Federalist Party was on the cusp of extinction.
Hartford Convention.
And all four candidates were Democratic Republicans. Two words that you would not see go together today. Yeah. Andrew Jackson was illiterate.
Yep, among many other things.
A war hero from the War of 1812. Go back and listen to our War of 1812 episodes to see how he conducted himself at the Battle of New Orleans.
Even though it was 2 weeks after the war.
It happens. Won the popular vote by fewer than 39,000 ballots and took home 99 Electoral College votes. Secretary of State John Quincy Adams. We have an episode on him too, don't we?
I think we do. I think so. We're getting all the plugs.
And yep, secured 84. Treasury Secretary William Crawford won 41, and House Speaker Henry Clay had 37.
Why did we never elect Henry Clay? Like, he got us out of, like, so much stuff. Like, he basically prevented the Civil War twice, and then when he died, we had a Civil War. Like,
thanks, Buchanan.
Yeah.
With no candidate earning a majority of the votes, the House again had to settle the deadlock, and Jackson was confident he would win the presidency given that he had won the popular vote and Electoral College. Because the House could choose among only three candidates, Clay got the boot. We mentioned Clay was Speaker. Well, after, which is the reason why I bring that up, is because the Speaker is in charge of the
House.
Yes. And he couldn't get enough votes in the House. Yep. After a month of horse trading, many of Clay's supporters shifted their support to Adams, who would go on to win the majority of the House vote. Maryland, Illinois, and Louisiana, which had cast most of their electoral votes for Jackson, as well as Kentucky, where Adams did not receive a single ballot in the popular vote, decided to back Adams. After his inauguration, Adams selected Clay as his Secretary of State. Jackson was furious and accused Adams and Clay of a corrupt bargain. He vacated his Senate seat and vowed to win the 1828 election as a Washington outsider.
Which he did.
Backed by his new party, the Democrats, Jackson made good on the promise, besting Adams. Is that really a corrupt bargain, though? I feel like that's just kind of like politics 101.
That's just what it's called.
So, okay.
Yeah.
Basically, Jackson with sour grapes.
Yeah.
Maybe it's because he couldn't read the newspapers. 1860.
Yeah.
All right. 1860. Election wasn't really close. Abraham Lincoln defeated John Breckinridge in an election that had one of the highest voting turnouts of all time. 1860 election was notable because it ripped the long dominant Democratic Party and thereby the nation in half. Because as soon
as South Carolina secession.
Yep. They're like, we lost, we're taking our ball, and we are going home.
Yeah.
That's the gist of it. The Supreme Court's Dred Scott decision of 1857, essentially legalizing slavery in all U.S. territories, had laid the battleground. The Republican Party largely opposed slavery, but was reluctant to push for its prohibition in states that already had it, and the Democrats were unable at the 1860 convention to establish an official party line on slavery. At a second convention that year, the Democrats nominated Senator Stephen Douglas of Illinois, but many Southerners defected and selected Breckinridge, who was vice president as their man, but would claim to be the official Democratic candidate. If you don't know about Stephen Douglas, him and Lincoln had already fought for a Senate seat in Illinois previously and had the famous Lincoln-Douglas debates.
Where the Freeport Doctrine was said.
They also fought over something else before.
His Mary Todd.
Mary Todd.
Go listen to our episodes.
Our Mary Todd Lincoln ones, yeah. Man, those two were just rivals in all sorts.
Yeah.
Constitutional Union Party, which had formed the year before and staged a campaign that basically ignored the issue of slavery, selected Senator John Bell of Tennessee.
That's the only reason I remember the Constitutional Union Party is because there was a dude named Bell, and it wasn't Alexander Graham, and they did nothing.
Yeah, based off the results, it kind of looks that way. Electoral College vote told the story. Lincoln snared only 40% of the popular vote, but the Electoral College took most of the North, along with California and Oregon. Douglas came in second in the popular vote, but took only Missouri and 3 votes in New Jersey. Breckinridge took most of the South, along with Maryland and Delaware, and Bell's middle-of-the-road policies earned him the middle of the road, Tennessee, Kentucky, and Virginia, which were basically all border states.
Yep.
Also, Tennessee, Kentucky, and Virginia, even though they were slave states, they hired large chunks of the population that were abolitionist. That's why we get West Virginia.
Yeah.
Weeks after the election, South Carolina voted to secede, followed by 6 more southern states. In February 1861, delegates from those states formed the Confederate States of America and selected Jefferson Davis, who was basically an idiot. In April, a South Carolina militia would try to take Fort Sumter, thus starting the Civil War.
Bum, bum, bum.
Which most historians now, I feel like, think that Lincoln would not have abolished slavery.
Huh.
He was more pro-union than abolitionist.
Given his first inaugural address. Yeah.
But they seceded anyway.
Yeah. They just didn't like him.
Because as Dan Sickles said, whiskey.
What?
Dan Sickles would argue that the Civil War happened because everybody in Congress was drunk.
Huh. I mean, that would make sense for back then. Everyone
knows. All right. 1872 is a weird one. This one almost deserves an episode by itself.
Okay.
But we're going to give a condensed version here.
I forgot who was in that.
All right, so set aside 1872 was the year a lady named Victoria Woodhull of the People's Party became the first woman to run for president. Basically, she was running on women's rights. Also, forget that writer and abolitionist Frederick Douglass was her running mate, even though he never consented to it. She just kind of put him on the ballot.
Frederick,
congrats, you're on the ballot. He's like, who are you? But anyway. Also, Susan B. Anthony would be arrested for illegally voting because she was a woman. It's just an overall strange election. 1872 was strange because one of the primary candidates never saw the final Electoral College vote, and that would be Horace Greeley. We'll talk about him in the next couple weeks. He wasn't supposed to put up much of a fight in his bid to unseat Ulysses S. Grant, but a schism in Grant's Republican Party made things a little more interesting. Grant, who had led the Union armies at the feet of the Confederacy, had not been so convincing in the Oval Office. Some say his cabinet may have been one of the most corrupt ever.
Yeah.
White House website describes him as out of his element and quotes one visitor who spoke of his puzzled pathos as of a man with a problem before him of which he does not understand the terms. All right. Some Republicans defected, becoming liberal Republicans, and cast their lot with Greeley, a Democrat, who'd go on to snare 44% of the popular vote. Almost 3 billion ballots, despite ending his campaigning to tend to his sick wife, who died a week before the election. Before Electoral College could cast its votes, newspaper founder died. And 63 of his 66 votes were dispersed among Thomas Hendricks, who would later become vice president, and other Democrats. Grant, though, attended Horace Greeley's funeral. There were something like 6 people that got electoral votes that election.
Dang.
And Greeley was running for 2 different parties.
How do you do that?
But he was running for the Democrats, and then, this federal Republican party just said, yeah, he's our guy, too.
Ah. Okay.
Yeah, it was weird. All right, moving on. 1876, Democratic Samuel Tilden had beaten Republican Rutherford B. Hayes. I have no clue what he ever did. He snared a 250,000 more ballots in the popular vote and had 19 more votes in the Electoral College. Problem was, Tilden was one Electoral College vote away from a majority of 185. And four states composing of a total of 20 votes, Florida, Louisiana, South Carolina, and Oregon, were disputing the results. In southern states, each party was accusing the other of fraud. With no precedent to lean on, the two parties agreed to establish a 15-member commission made up of 7 Republicans, 7 Democrats, and an independent. The independent Supreme Court Justice David Davis, however, was unexpectedly selected by the Illinois legislator to serve in the U.S. Senate.
David Davis is a really good name. Like, I don't know.
Like Joseph? Yeah. Joe Joseph? He was replaced by Justice Joseph Bradley, a diehard Republican who would cast every vote for Hayes, providing him the 20 votes he needed for a majority. Shocking.
Wow.
Politicking was going on back then, too.
Couldn't see that coming.
Democrats initially threatened to block the decision, but in a backroom deal, they agreed to drop their opposition if Hayes, among other provisions, removed federal troops that had been in the South under Reconstruction. Hayes was sworn in March 5th, 1877. And within weeks, he removed the troops, and that was one of the great disasters in American history.
Yep. Some people call that the corrupt bargain part two.
I feel like
we called it a push.
I feel like that's more of a...
That's
yeah.
an even more
yeah.
than the actual corruption.
And the problem is, once the federal troops leave, then you get segregation and all the other bad things associated with the American South circa late 1800s to 1950.
Yeah. Well, good thing Henry Grady's there to get in some propaganda.
All right, 1920. Have you gotten this far yet?
Nope.
All right, I can tell... teach her all about this. Battle between two newspaper publishers. But the election wasn't terribly exciting. Republican Warren G. Harding.
Go listen to our episode on him.
And Democrat.
Super corrupt.
Wasn't his wife running the show?
Probably.
Because he was like dead.
I don't really remember.
I think that was part of the episode. All right. If you don't remember, Harding was elected as the Republican candidate because they said he looked presidential. He was a handsome man. That's why they elected him.
That's what's important. Not how well you can govern a country, but how good you are.
He destroyed Democrat James Cock, a historic beatdown, taking more than 60% of the popular vote, along with 37 of the 48 states. Third place, though, is where it got interesting. Long before the Socialist Party of America basically enjoyed a little bit of success under Bernie Sanders, the union leader Eugene Debs ran for president in 1900, 1904, 1908, and 1912.
Oh, man.
This
guy's just not getting anything.
1912 was his best year. He received 900,000 votes.
No electoral votes, though?
Nope. He probably ruined someone's campaign, though, if I had to guess.
Yeah.
1920, though, Debs had to run his fifth campaign from the most unlikely of headquarters, prison. No stranger to incarceration, he'd served time in connection with an 1894 railroad strike. Debs again drew the government's ear in 1918 when he gave an anti-war speech in Canton, Ohio, in which he basically said the ruling class made all decisions, sending the working class to war, and that becomes a very famous Supreme Court case. Because he argues that that is my First Amendment right, that I am allowed to do that. He was convicted under the espionage law and sentenced to 10 years in prison. Demonstrations protesting his imprisonment evolved into the May Day riots of 1919, and Debs was later moved to Atlanta Federal Penitentiary, where he conducted his presidential campaign.
I mean, like, now, I guess, like, you have mass communication, so, like, it wouldn't be that bad, but, like, how would you campaign for prison, like, in 1920?
I know.
Like,
he's still got 900,000 votes.
Yeah.
He has a diehard following. The following year on Christmas, Harding commuted Debs' sentence to time served.
Okay.
I got to remember the Supreme Court case. It's Debs versus, I want to say, don't hold me to this, I could be completely wrong, it's been a while. I believe it's ruled that during the time of war, speech can be limited.
That's what it ruled?
Yes, and that's why they threw him in jail. We're able to throw him in jail.
Okay.
1948. President Truman running for re-election against Thomas Dewey. This one is more of the media's fault.
Oh, yeah. Okay. I know this one.
1946 midterms had handed both houses to Republicans for the first time in almost 20 years. And opinion showed that just 1 in 3 Americans approved of Trump's handling of the, not Trump, Truman's handling of the presidency. I saw T-R-U-M. Didn't, my brain finished the sentence for me. Making matters worse, Truman's Commerce Secretary Henry Wallace had revolted over the administration's foreign policy towards the Soviet Union and declared his intention to run as a third-party candidate. Southern Democrats also jumped ship over his stance on civil rights, forming the States' Rights Party, a.k.a. the Dixiecrats, and electing segregationist Strom Thurmond, who was in the Senate for like 100 years. He was like a senator, like well into his 90s. The final pre-election Gallup poll, interestingly taken in mid-October and not released until a day before Election Day, showed Dewey beating Truman by 5 percentage points. Even on Election Day, Truman recalled an NBC report predicting he would lose. It wasn't until 4 a.m. that Secret Service agents woke him up to tell him he had won. The Chicago Tribune had referred to Truman as a nincompoop. On an editorial page. That's a word we don't use enough anymore.
Yeah,
we need to bring back nincompoop.
Yeah.
Poetically, a printer strike forced the newspaper to publish its morning edition hours earlier than usual. And then you famously get the Truman picture of him standing on the back of a train saying, Dewey wins, with the newspaper. They actually say what happened was the reason why Truman was able to win, all Dewey's supporters saw it was in the bag, so they didn't go out and vote.
Oh, yeah.
They're like, I don't need to vote. Everyone says the election's over.
Yeah.
Saw something similar in 2000, that the really close election between Gore and Bush. Basically, what happened was the media started calling the eastern states way too early, so people on the western states thought the election was over. And so they didn't go out and vote.
Okay.
So now it's like they can't report results until, I think, polling stations are closed all over.
That makes a lot of sense.
Yep. All right. Ready for one more?
Yeah.
1972. Happened in a quick 2-minute phone call. Senator George McGovern of South Dakota had just won the Democratic nomination for president and phoned Senator Thomas Eagleton to ask him to be his running mate. Several high-profile Democrats had declined to join McGovern on the ticket, so he picked Eagleton in part because he hoped he would help him shore up the Catholic vote. To say Eagleton didn't undergo the intense vetting of, say, Sarah Palin or Paul Ryan would be an understatement. Had McGovern grilled Eagleton according to today's standards, he might have learned Eagleton's secret, that the senator from Missouri had been hospitalized 3 times for depression and had undergone electroshock therapy on more than 2 of those occasions.
We talked about that a little bit in our Nikola Tesla episode.
Electroshock therapy?
Yeah. Well, something like that. But like he would put kids in like a room like with electric something around it, and like it was supposed to make them smarter, like while they learned. It doesn't work.
I'm guessing it doesn't. I think it probably does more damage.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. When rumors first began to surface, McGovern stood by his running mate, but eventually decided that Eagleton posed a liability. During a news conference at a South Dakota state park where McGovern was supposed to be relaxing, not campaigning, Eagleton revealed his medical history to reporters and explained that he had only recently divulged the matter to McGovern. On August 1st, 18 days after he was selected, Eagleton officially dropped out of the campaign, and Richard Nixon goes on to obliterate McGovern, carrying 49 states and beating him by 18 million votes, thereby striking fear into would-be presidents for decades about who they chose to join them on the ticket. Now, Richard Nixon's VP candidate, do you know who it was?
It was Ford. No?
It was not Ford. Spiro Agnew.
Oh.
So when Nixon resigns, who's supposed to become president?
Spiro Agnew.
Problem was, Spiro Agnew was also in a mental asylum.
Oh.
So that's why Ford. So that's why Ford becomes the first non-elected president ever.
Huh.
For 2 years, and his basically he is done before he even starts.
Yeah.
Because first thing he does is he pardons Nixon. Everyone's
and
like,
nobody wanted that.
Nope.
Yeah.
Well, there you go. Those are some of the more bizarre presidential elections in American history. Yes.
Yeah.
Next week we got candidates.
Oh boy.
Or 2 weeks we got candidates.
Yeah. Well, isn't the week after the parties?
Either one.
All right.
We'll flip a coin.
All right.
All right. Just like most people vote, they flip a coin.
Yep.
I don't know.
That's what most people do. But.
I see it all the time when I'm at the polling stations. People just flipping coins. Not really. That'd be very bizarre. But anyway, thanks for listening.
Thank you for tuning in to History Class After Hours, the show where we talk about the things your history teachers didn't have time to teach you. If you wanted to stay updated on upcoming events for the History Club, please visit www.starsmillhistoryc.wixsite.com/2020. If you liked this episode, please share it with your friends and subscribe to our channel on iTunes Podcast, Spotify, or wherever you're listening. Be on the lookout for new episodes, and we'll be posting every week. Until next time, stay curious.